is 10 a.m. in the West Coast, and it is 1 p.m. in the East Coast. It is 8 p.m. in Jerusalem today, July 6, 2015, and this is Orly Benny Davis with The Impossible Truth. Today on BBS Radio, we are going to cover all the news from Greece that we can put our hands on it, the news about the bailout and what happened and where they're going to come from then, from now on. Then we're going to look around to see what's really happening. Then we're going to visit a little in Israel to see what the foreign minister of Greece had to say. And, of course, we're going to check on the Iran deal, and we are going to talk and give you some music. And I hope that you're going to have fun and you're going to enjoy every second of it. I have a little file for you on the Greece, how we define the EU with the bailout. So let's listen to it now.
Greece's Prime Minister staked his reputation on it, perhaps his country's future on it. And the early results of the bailout referendum are showing the no vote leading strongly. Here we see casting his ballot in Athens, the Prime Minister Alexis Tsipras saying that Greece is determined to take its destiny into its own hands. Let's go to our correspondent Barnaby Phillips in Athens and Oda Abdelhamid, who is in Thessaloniki. OK, we see Barnaby there first of all. Let's go to you, Barnaby, first of all. This is pretty seismic, isn't it? We had Alexis Tsipras saying, I stake my future on this. We had leaders in Europe saying, if you vote no, you, the Greek people, then it's effectively financial suicide. So where do we stand now?
It's moving very fast, but I think it's fair to say, David, at this point, it's much better than Alexis Tsipras might have feared a couple of days ago. 27% of official results coming in, over 60% have voted no. They have a 20% lead over the yes camp. It looks conclusive, including heavy no votes in areas that didn't even vote Syriza in the general election. I've just been down in Syntagma Square in the center of Athens, and there are large numbers of government supporters congregating. They think that they have won. And Mr. Tsipras took an enormous gamble, and it appears to have paid off. Remember, you've got to get into the mentality of the people who voted no today. They weren't voting no to the euro, or at least the vast majority were not. They were voting no to the terms on offer and to austerity. What follows from that is that Mr. Tsipras will feel emboldened. He will return to European governments who've made no secret of their distaste for him, no secret of their desire that his government should fall, and he will carry on trying to negotiate with them in a situation of extreme financial urgency with Greek banks close to collapse. I'll bring in my guest at this point, Aristidis Hatsis of the University of Athens. Aristidis, a triumph for the Greek Prime Minister, Alexis Tsipras.
An unexpected triumph, because every poll, including the exit polls, were a lot more negative for, I mean, supposedly the difference, the gap was very short. However, this is a very strong mandate to Alexis Tsipras to bargain harder.
And a huge setback for European leaders and an indictment of their policies over the past 5 years here in Greece.
It is certainly an indictment. The reason for this vote was that the Greek people apparently had enough. However, I don't know how strong a bargaining chip this would be with Alexis Tsipras tomorrow. Because Alexis Tsipras has this as a bargaining chip. However, it has closed banks and ATMs without money. So I suppose we are going to have a new brinkmanship game now, a more dangerous, more risky brinkmanship game than before.
More risky because Alexis Tsipras will push harder, arguing that the Greek people are firmly behind him.
Yes, because he will feel more certain, more risky, maybe, and at the same time, more responsible to satisfy the great majority of the Greek people.
Well, surely institutions like the European Union, the Commission, the leaders, will have to now listen to him when he says, for example, I want debt relief. This is something you gave me no encouragement on over the past 5 months. Mm-hmm. Now you, Mrs. Merkel, Mr. Hollande, and so on, you have to give way. Is that realistic, do you think?
If there is a political will in the European leadership to do whatever is necessary for Greece to remain a part of the Eurozone, then I'm pretty sure that the new proposal by the institutions will have some better terms and some, not only mentioning, but also some particular and concrete terms on debt relief. Not debt haircut, I mean, this is rather unlikely, but debt relief. And I think that this is enough for Alexis Tsipras, because it would be easier for him now to pass it through the Greek parliament.
So there is a glimmer of hope. You do see a potential deal in the days
ahead. If Alexis Tsipras told the truth to the Greek people, when he promised that the no vote doesn't mean Brexit, it only means we're going to negotiate hard, however, trying our best to remain in the Eurozone, then there is a hope for a better proposal and for a better compromise for the Greek people.
One legacy of this extraordinary referendum campaign, organized at the last minute around proposals which no longer existed, is deeper divisions within Greek society, which could be dangerous in the months ahead.
Unfortunately, there is a deep division. There is a schism in Greek society right now. This schism is not balanced, as we just saw. However, there is a schism. And it's going to take a while for these wounds to be healed. And I hope that the Greek Prime Minister today will try to be as conciliatory as possible. I really hope that he is going to build his negotiating strategy on an internal consensus. So I'm waiting for his, of course, for his statement and for his moves, especially for the next week.
And whatever happens has to happen quickly, doesn't it?
Yeah,
not
very
least
quickly.
Because of the banks.
Because there is no cash. There is no cash in Greek banks. And there is a danger that even the ATMs will close. So, I mean, the clock is ticking for the Greek government, but also for the European institutions. Because if the Greek government realizes that there are no cash and there is no possibility of a compromise, then the only option could be Brexit.
Aristide Hetsis, thank you very much. It's all very up in the air, David, on an extraordinary night in Athens. We'll bring you the latest in the coming hours.
All right. This was from Al Jazeera. You know, sometimes Israeli do use or have friends at Al Jazeera, so we thank them for that. It's incredible news from Greece. They voted more than 61% of the major vote was to a no to the European deal. What does it mean? It means that they are not going to settle for, you know, being hungry anymore. They want to be in control of their own life, and they really don't want to be connected to the Ritzy Club, that it's the EU. And, you know, I've been trying to analyze what's really happening with all the money, because how come they owe so much? And I realized that there is like some kind of modification in the plan. In the beginning, there was supposed to have one monetary group, and everybody is, you know, have a freedom to travel and commerce, etc. But sure enough, you know, in the entry zone of the EU, there is like a big ticket price item that they have to pay every year for production of milk and production, I don't know, what was it, wine, I think. It's something that, but let's limit it to the milk that I second and I understand. But the fact that they owe so much money that, you know, that they have to give every year, it's probably out of the pocket. And, you know, sometimes, you know, the rich people don't pay attention that the little guy don't pay. They cannot pay the dues for the rich club. For us, you know, it always was an understanding that, you know, the division of the clubs is when you have such a high ticket item, it means that not everybody is welcome. And that's what the Germans and the French did. They outcast the most of the other nations. And that was the most important thing to do, is to give them a break. Now let's look at Greece. Greece is a beautiful country. It seems, old, of course, and I know that if you generate some think tank to sit around, we can market that that place like there is no tomorrow. You know, Turkey lost all her tourists from Israel, which encompassed a lot of money, because it's not just the Israeli travel to Turkey with all the family and friends. They bring friends from all over to meet there. And what happened with Turkey when they decided to be nonsense kind of, I don't like you guys, routine, they lost all the tourism and nobody's traveling there. So the Israelis are looking to a different area. I know that Croatia wanted the Israelis to come along, but Croatia is not set yet. Greece is much more advanced, I think, than Croatia at this point. As far as tourists, even though Croatia, I heard, is magnificent. But think about it. Greece has so much to give to the world. And if, you know, the Olympic were there, it means that she has established a really big, massive, hard-working class of sportsmanship facilities. And maybe we should start putting, hey, Europe, yes, you could start having the games there. You can have a lot of events there. You can create. You know, people do have to understand that when we work as a group, we have to take care of our own constantly. You don't give us the ticket, the bill, because the people said to me today, you know, oh, I heard in the news from other newsmen who saying that they were supposed to have a break, but they never got it. So what kind of a break? Those Greek people don't want that break. They want to have a freedom to their own destiny. And you know what? Chapeau for that. I've been in Italy after they entered to the EU, and I told them, get out of there. And I told them years ago, and I'm telling them now, every time again and again, but now it seems like they got it for some reason. But it's still bad. It's still bad. They've never been the same. And, you know, they're all talking about the 80s when it was the 80s. They're not coming back to Italy anymore. And I just want to remind you guys that in the 80s, I was there. I was a part, a very active part of the commerce there. And I know how to run commerce where it's needed. It's connection. It's working hard. It's going around. It's opening doors. It's giving some contracts. And you guys, the European Union, I don't know what contracts they have to give. Oh, the United Nations? Nah, they don't work. They don't write contracts. They divide the gold between themselves. Whatever. I don't remember any other contract that had been awarded this way for a long time. So I've been thinking about many things today, and Greece is in my heart and in my mind. And I'm telling you, if we can make a marketing plan for them, 1 year of incredible hard work and incredible friends, that, you know, Israeli are a part of their friend list. Greece is a dear friend of Israel. I'm sure that, I know that our lawyer is working with them already. I know that some accounting will be really good for them, but give us a chance to do your marketing, Greece, and we will rock that place up, okay? So don't despair. Whatever you decide, you know, they give you the deal, fine. You don't give the deal, trusting God. You're not alone. We are here also for you. Count on us, okay? So Let's go to get some music so we can have some fun and change the mood, even though those days are important, very important. And that was Demis Roussos. You know, I wasn't sure if he's still, but he's not among us anymore. And I remember that we put a rip, you know, rest in peace on him. He died in January 25th this year. Demis Roussos, I met him, dear man, that was a Greek. Actually, he was a Greek, Egyptian Greek. Wonderful, wonderful voice, a wonderful legend. And he probably is praying for his Greek people over there, and I hope that the angels are with him and that they'll pray hard because Greece needs it. So we wanted to say hello to all the, you know, our friends from Greece and all our friends from all over the European Union. Guys, you are, you know, a handful. We thought the United Nations is busy. Now you get us. And before you know it, we got also referendum of some sort with the English. And when Mother England is coming to play, I don't know if you're going to like the result. Listen, sometimes you create a group, create an organization, doesn't work the way. You fix it, okay? Fix it. People are crying for help for too long and you don't listen, means that you didn't do right. So fix it before it gets dismantled. So I think that I got some kind of, you know, English information. But let's listen to the next part that I wanted you to hear so we can analyze what's been going around.
My government will work to promote reform in the European Union, including a stronger role for member states and national parliaments. The United Kingdom will work for peace and security on Europe's borders and for stable relations between Russia and Ukraine, based on respect for national sovereignty, territorial integrity, and international law. My ministers will strive to improve the humanitarian situation in Syria, to reduce violence and promote a political settlement.
Hi, Her Majesty the Queen of England. What a lady. What a queen the world has. What a graceful present we add all those years, all the time, and we still have, and we bless her for long life, and I hope she and her parliament will come and help the Syrian. It will be time that England put her feet in the middle of this incredible game, because, you know, we love America and Russian standout, but we're really getting tired of, you know, of no solution, no resolution, whatever it happens. We need, you know, Her Majesty the Queen to announce it. And I'll do anything in my power to let you know what's going on. And I hope that blessings always will come their way. Yesterday, on Sunday, they had the christening of the little one, Charlotte, Diana. And Diana's, God bless her soul, church. And the important thing is to remember that we are chained, we are connected, and we are eternal. So whoever starts a job is not destined to finish. The rest of us need to pick up and keep on going. And that's what her son are doing. And, you know, God bless them all. May they go from glory to glory, because we are expecting a very strong leadership in that side of the of Europe, and I'm sure that they're gonna help the EU get their way right. Anyway, so that was from that, but let's put some music and see what we can talk about. next, because I got something else for you. And we are back. It's Orly Benny Davis with The Impossible Truth on BBS Radio Studio One with Doug Newsome, which is an incredible, you know, director of this show. I appreciate him so much. I wanted to tell you that we have more spots for, you know, for guests. Anytime you want to come and join us, you're welcome to call in. I love this space to be for you and for me to talk about God, to talk about the universe, to talk about the news and politics. And we can make it if we join forces. So when somebody has to say something, that's a nightingale just to say, you will have the chance. And I'm here, you know. And we do have another spot on Sunday, which we're hosting, you know, we're making all Israeli music, a flavor of Judaism, you can call it. It's 7 a.m. in the West Coast, every Sunday morning. And then we have an Italian flavor evening on, for me, it's evening on Wednesday at 7 p.m. Jerusalem time, which will be your 9 a.m. in the West Coast and noon at the East Coast. So please remember, The Impossible Truth is not just in English, of course, it's multilingual. And as you may understand by my accent, even though that it sounds really sudden from all the years that I spent in South Carolina. Talking about South Carolina, the Confederate flag, are you going to have a debate about it? I think that the debate was done already when you have people die in church with the guy, a crazy white guy, decided to kill somebody because of race. What do you think? It's time, or I know it's respectful. Put it in the museum. That's what it belongs. That's what Governor Haley said, right? So I respect everything, but I don't remember that it was used for holy causes. You know, I can understand something that is respectful, but if we're talking about that, you remember what Confederate flag meant was one thing in the creation of the United States of America, and God bless America, no question about it. But what people made it to be was not the intended. So, because it's historical artifact, and it's because it's historical, you know, thing to do is to keep the history going, so remember. But please cancel all the rest of that bad history. I don't, you know, people have the tendency to commemorate events, of course, and commemorate souls and people beautiful they love. But in the same token, they're commemorating also those enemies of peace and love, loving people, you know. Like all those museums that we have all over the globe to remind everybody what happened. And for some reason, I see so much of artifacts of the of whatever the enemy of that, you know, every generation have an enemy of our time. And if we remind the rest, you know, the next generation that, you know, somebody already did something and they want to copy it just for fun, maybe we should eliminate that from any kind of museum. I respect every museum that holds memory dear to his heart or her heart, but please don't remember the bad guys. It's not helping us. That's really in the Bible. It said, we are saying you just elevate and, you know, cancel the name of Amalek. The guy, the people that hurt you most, the people who devastate you most, don't remember them. Cancel them from earth. And may do so. So, Confederate flag, that's a debate. I'll be happy to debate with everybody who wants to, because, you know, I'm here to talk, and no question about it, I'll be happy to join you too. However, there is something that happened tonight in Israel, and there is convening an emergency session. You see, we have a situation. It's absurd, the absurdity of this nation sometimes to devastate everybody, but I'm gonna share it with you. You know, the Jewish people came after 2,000 years from the diaspora to bring their Bible, Holy Bible, and to be in the Promised Land. That was promised to them. They've been before to build the first and second temple there. And the ruins here are, you know, proven facts. You know, we're not inventing anything. And the tradition is very, very severe that, you know, you wouldn't invent that too. So we have a situation now that in Jerusalem, first of all, we have a high alert that I mentioned yesterday about all, you know, some stuff that they are saying that they're going to cleanse the east part of Jerusalem from Christians. And God forbid, if anything comes to play, we need to make sure that the emergency session needs to be put in place. I'm not kidding. I really don't take lightly any threat that people have on any other religion in Jerusalem. And I love my fellow men, and I respect everybody. I don't mind, you know, anybody. For some reason, there are some fanatic who decided that they want to cleanse. You heard that name? Cleansing. That's something that we heard before. From Christianity, and of course, they'll come after everybody. So now they closed the Temple Mount site. Now, I must say that I wouldn't go on Temple Mount these days because it's not safe. It's crazy. I don't want to be, you know, it's holy. I want to feel that holiness in my good sense of, you know, relaxation, not relaxation, like quietness that you need with God. You don't need to, and people worship other things. It's their business. So they're going to talk about it and what's going to happen, you know, and how we're going to have to do something about Temple Mount. But the truth of the matter is that we need to close this Jerusalem to every Muslim worshiper now if they don't do anything against that threat on Christian. I'm not talking in general. I'm serious. I'm talking about not the good people that live there, work there, or do everything in their power to have a wonderful. But you know, when you know people are under threat, you need to safeguard them. And who is more capable and understandable than Israel to understand when there is a risk? You know, you take no chances. Okay, it's already 40 into the hour, and we have so much music I wanted to play to you. Let's have another one, and we'll go back. Okay, I was sure that we're going to hear some another spot, but it's okay. We are here, and I'll be happy to put it as soon as we are ready. We have to talk about something very important. Okay, we're ready, and we're gonna put it for you right now.
The future is unclear, not only for Greece but for the actual Eurozone itself. Now let's discuss this with one of the architects of the Euro, Bernard Liotard. Bernard, thank you so much for coming on RT. You played such an integral role in the establishment of the currency itself. In your opinion, what has gone wrong?
Well, we didn't just change the currency. We also changed the rules of the relationships between the central banks and governments. And that was not part of the deal initially. This is something that has been added at the moment when the euro was launched and had been incorporated in other laws and treaties. But the technical part of the currency foundation, the convergence system, which is the part that I was involved with when I was at the central bank in Belgium, which had the responsibility for that particular phase, that was not what we expected. That had been added on it.
Did you ever foresee did you ever foresee a time which, you know, we possibly may have to face very shortly, where you've got a member state perhaps leaving the euro? Did you think that was a possibility?
Well, actually, that was decided that it would not be an option. That was part of the conditions, the political conditions that we were given at the moment of the design. There would be a one-way street, and it was quite clear that that was supposed to be the objective. The ultimate objective, of course, was to have create convergence on a political level and an economic level in parallel. With these additional changes that were introduced, again, politically, that has not happened, okay? So we're now in a place where I frankly never expected we would be.
Do you think the euro itself as a currency is at risk here?
There's a lot at risk because we're playing on chicken on all sides, not just the Greek side, but also the European side, and actually even the IMF side has actually now making a different viewpoint than the Europeans themselves. So there seems to be, uncertainty being fed by all parties in this game. And uncertainty is not good for anything, really. So certainly not for the economy or for investments in economies.
I mean, the Eurozone is really, it's an unprecedented experiment. Nobody could know for sure what was going to happen. If Greece leaves, do you think there's a danger others could follow?
Well, it would be a precedent that is not part of any treaty. Okay? So we're outside of the framework. But by the way, personally, I don't believe that the choice that is being given is the appropriate choice. I think 100% in or 100% out is in fact a false dilemma. There are other solutions available, and what's strange is that they're never talked about publicly anywhere. I don't see any reason why Greece would not have two currencies, right? Be participant in the euro for tourism and for shipping, which are the largest sectors of the economy, but at the same time have some neo-drachma, which is playing on different rules and which is providing capacity to actually reanimate the economy at the grassroots level a lot easier than what happens with the euro now. So I think there's a third solution, which is let's innovate. This is actually, there are precedents for this. I know economic theory never has been assuming the possibility of having several currencies in parallel, but in practice we do. Switzerland has for the last 80 years been using two currencies. You have the Swiss franc and a business-to-business currency, which is working in parallel and been stabilizing the economy. Never talked about, but it's working. In Britain, if you're a British company, you can choose to have your balance sheets and your taxes paid in euros, so you can actually, for all practical purposes, be part of the eurozone and at the same time in a British pound economy. So these
Bernard,
things
I just wanted to ask you, you mentioned the alternatives. If they do exist, why are they not being offered, as it seems they're not, to Greece? I mean, is this about exerting power, or is it just fear of changing the status quo?
Well, it would create a precedent for a very different way of addressing economic problems. We're basically dealing with either orthodoxy in a classical old way or getting ready for the information age, because basically that's what I believe is going to be needed and necessary. And we're delaying the process. We're still using an industrial age monetary construct in a period where we have technologies to do things differently. every Greek citizen has a mobile phone, basically, or at least every family does. So one could create new ways of payment systems with dual currencies. And all that is possible. It hasn't been done before, although there's no reason not to do it now. It's certainly better than what's being debated.
Do you think there's perhaps a danger that the big hitters in the Eurozone are afraid that if Greece does go it alone, they might actually succeed survival alone?
Well, let me give you the precedent of another country which nobody talks about these days, which is Iceland. Iceland was the country that had been biggest, worst hit back in the 2007-2008. And it has disappeared from the news. And one of the reasons it has simply disappeared is that they didn't do what the official orthodoxy was requiring them to do. They let the banks go bankrupt. They put the bankers in prison. And now they're in the process of deciding on having a currency issued by governments rather than through bank debt. This is a very different environment, but it's completely taboo in the mainstream media.
And let's just take a look at
it's working.
And as you said, it does appear to be working. Let's just take a look at the near future, if we may. What do you think will happen if Greece doesn't make its next repayment July 20th? The European Central Bank shuts off vital liquidity to the Greek banks. What will happen next?
Well, banks will be closed. They are closed already for all technical purposes. The closure will go on longer. We have had actually a precedent of that nature with Argentina. But again, I claim that this is not necessary. We can actually solve the problems differently than what's being debated. That's the key point.
Bernard, it's been a pleasure speaking to you. Thanks so much for coming on RT, speaking to one of the men behind the implementation of the euro. That's Bernard.
All right, that was another friend from the news. And talking about Greece and their possibility of using the drachma back in circulation, so having a parallel currency, which is something that will be the only option at this point because the EU... the euro is way too expensive for them to have. So I don't suppose they're going to keep it that way. Anyhow, it's a time of change and it's going to change. And I'm listening to the news right now that the oil prices take a big hit after a surprise Greek no vote. So it means that things are shifting, starting to shifting in the economy too. And, you know, when we talk about the economy, we remember that we have on the table right now the Iranian deal that's trying to, you know, to bluff their way around the world with having everything and giving nothing in return, something that top diplomats who convene for to crunch around nuclear talks will say that there is a few last but tough issues left to resolve. That's from the news, because Putin and Rouhani just spoke, and I assume that they still have something to do. But you know what? When you have a sanction on the country, especially the one that threat Israel, you know, right to exist and promise to wipe Israel off the earth, you don't go around give a company that is connected to Iran to work on your Tel Aviv rail station. You know, the Israeli have a way to, in the business section to be oblivious to what's going on sometimes. And they do beat a Chinese company really, really wants to put their hands on anything that moves in China and resource. There is in the world, and you guys know what I'm talking about, and they are wonderful because they, listen, they are tradition men, they work hard, they deserve what they got. There is no question about it. They work hard for it. But if you guys sell to Tehran, I don't think I want you around. So they'll have to decide if the, you know, Tehran is it or is the railway in Tel Aviv. Israeli government probably is not aware of it, but right now it's a big deal, not, you know, sanction on Tehran, and this is the crunch time. We cannot allow a gap like this. And Israeli officials are really busy, you know, surviving on their seats, because with 61 votes in parliament, which like the bare majority by one vote, the chair is very shaky, I assume. And there is already calling, you know, from the opposition for the prime minister to quit, because if the deal with Iran will be signed, Mr. Lapid, Yair Lapid, is the former Treasury Secretary of Israel. He asked Netanyahu to step down, which is, this guy is a tough cookie. I wouldn't mess with him in a good day or any day. If he believes hard, he's going to shake the boat hard. I know for a fact that he's not planning. That he's not an easy going, you know, goody two shoes kind of guy. He goes after what he wants. And that's the prime minister office, I guess. But it's really too tough for him to handle. He's too young. I don't think he's a rookie in politics. But he has the heart of a lion, so we never know. Anyway, but we bless our prime minister and the state of Israel, and we hope that everything will keep on going. And, you know, we need to finish with the Iranian deal as soon as possible, so we start to have a no-zone contract, that if they break it, we know that we need to react. And if they think about it right, they lost that round. They think and the Iranian general, you know, after Kerry broke his hip, he's barely, he missed 4th of July, and he's there working so hard. The Iranian general said, we'll never be on good terms with the USA after all what America did for Iran. I you know what? It's time to change there. Iranian, which are, some of them are beautiful, I know them. It's not going to be forever fighting, right? And if you on the table, people trying to give you a break, and you are talking like this, it means that you don't have a sense of understanding of the global scale that you're going to encounter if you're going to upset some of the big players on the table. So let's hope that when we come back on Wednesday, we have some signed deals. If not, it's going to be all around, you know, for nothing. It will be all for nothing. The better, you know, just cut the deals, cut, you know, a framework and go. And don't commit too much. And this, you know, sanction needs not to be lifted until we see goodwill gestures. You know, we learned from the Americans the best how to deal with them. So let's conclude with some music and telling you that I'll be back on Wednesday at an hour earlier. It will be at 9 a.m. Western time or 7 p.m. Israeli time. And we're going to have some Italian music and what's going on in Italy. And we're going to say goodbye now. And we're going to thank UNESCO for recognizing ancient Jewish necropolis name World Heritage Site, which, thank you, UNESCO. Good stuff for, you know, coming sometimes this way. I love you. I just remember there is a God, and it's not us. Pray for him. Pray hard. Be well. Be safe. Be worthy before him, and be healthy. And God, please, please bring grace to all human race and all the men in the world, and a lot of happiness to all your youngsters. And who is getting married this summer, please enjoy, have fun. Bless you with great, great, great families. God bless you all. Talk to you on Wednesday. Thank you.